You are listening to the Recruiting Daily Podcast.
Hey, this is William Tincup. Listen, today we're going to be interviewing Bala, who's the CEO and founder of eTechie, a software firm in Tampa, Florida. I've mentioned eTechie many times from the stage because I love their software, and I think they're a great solution for both kind of the interview process and the assessment of technical talent. I'm excited to kind of talk with him, get in his head a little bit, and talk about his amazing clients. So sit back and get ready for a great interview.
Well, I just wrote about this, so I'm already well versed, and I believe in Bala's vision. It's speed to value. So the process of acquiring a candidate, so sourcing, should be faster than it is. Marketing to said candidate should be faster than what it is. Once a candidate takes an action, then interviews like this should happen faster because the talent moves faster. So behaviorally, you've got two things kind of colliding. You've got kind of an old process, an old hiring managers and old recruiters ways in blocking the way that talent behaves today. And talent behaves in a very quick fashion to Bala's kind of his gut feel for this. It behaves differently. And if we don't move fast enough, like if companies don't move fast enough, then they're going to lose the talent, period, end of story. So I think, go ahead, Ed.
No, especially the talent in demand or the...
That's right. Yeah, you know, again, we're thinking of the extension of that war for talent. That's a 30-year-old term. There technically is a war for talent in some areas, and in some positions and in some industries, like healthcare. Great example. There's a job open at every healthcare facility in the world. Okay, so they are really fighting a war for talent. Silicon Valley and software engineers. Again, a real legitimate war. And what's interesting is talent comes in and they ask questions differently than we did. So talent comes in to the interview process and asks three questions that I would have never asked at that age, at under 30. One is, the first question out of their mouth is, "What's next?" Which is not a question. I'm almost 50. That's not a question I would have asked 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I would have never asked an interviewer, "What's next?" That's inherently an internal mobility question. But what they're really asking is, okay, let's say I do this job that you've asked me to do, and I do it well, and it's 9 to 18 months later. So the second question that they ask for me is, what are you going to do to make me better?
Which is a natural question at this stage of life.
In a lot of different ways.
This stage
of
up, trained up,
etc. Evolution.
But what it comes down to is
that's a natural question.
Training and development.
Companies that can't answer that question,
coming in with this base lose knowledge. The talent. I want to learn these languages, etc. What are you going to do to make me better? Natural question. Recruiters have never really been asked learning and development or training and development questions. The third question is, how are you going to praise me? How are you going to reward me? How are you going to recognize me, etc.? So again, these are three questions that push recruiting further into HR and push HR further into recruiting. These are not questions that recruiters previously had to answer. So the talent is behaving differently, which is really the important part. And speed plays a critical role here because they've got options. And if you can't answer their questions, or if it takes you, like I had a hiring manager tell me that it takes me about 2 weeks to get, you know, an interview scheduled.
I tell you, out of the three, totally 100% agree with those three questions candidate asks. And the fourth one is, they're also looking more keenly on the culture of the company. What is the style of
that's right.
That's, you know, diversity. I mean, these questions have been coming along pretty seriously. In this interview.
Very, very important questions to ask. And, you know, when someone shows them a job, they go to Google first and they Google the company. Second, they go to Glassdoor and they Glassdoor the company. Third,
they go into LinkedIn and look at former employees, and they reach out to former employees to find out what it was to work there. And the interesting thing about Glassdoor is they don't believe 100% of negative or 100% of positive. So if they look at a review, let's say of eTechie, which I don't know if y'all have ever looked at your own Glassdoor reviews, but if they look at y'all and it's 100% positive, like everything, oh my God, glowing reviews of everything, they automatically distrust it. Okay. Yeah. So they're automatically like, okay, yeah, this has been modified. I still believe in the day in the life. I'm kind of a throwback to years of old, but I still think there's nothing better than letting a candidate come in and, you know, hang out for a day, you know, walk around, talk to people, you know, join meetings, see behind the veil. That we want you to make a good decision about fit. And we want to make a good decision about you and fit.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the most powerful tools you can use to make the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, that's compared to, you know, used to be like hire slow and fire fast, you know, which we all heard mm-hmm. about it before.
Yep.
But now within that hire slow, I mean, the process of sourcing, screening, synchronous and asynchronous ways of mm-hmm. Filtering candidates, whether it is different types of background checks, social profiles, cultural fit, whatever. But that process got to happen faster with the technologies and tools.
It's the value chain. I mean, if we really think of it as a value chain, I mean, I remember reading about Michael Dell 100 years ago, but he had 100 MBAs in a room trying to figure out how to hold inventory less and reduce the time of inventory. So at the time, it was like 13 hours. So Dell would fly all of, let's say, to build a laptop, would have all of the materials in and holding for 13 hours, build and ship. And he had, again, 100 MBAs in a room trying to figure out how to make that 12 and a half hours. Just 30 minutes difference. Like, what do we have to do to streamline in our processes to make our hold time lower? And then once they got to 12 and a half hours, which they did, then they had a celebration. Everybody went out, you know, pizza and cake and, you know, the whole bit. Everyone took off for a week. Then he had them come back and go, okay, how do we make it 12 hours? Right? Because that was the game. That's the supply chain game. Why we don't look at the value chain and the supply chain of talent in much the same way? How can we both get to a high quality outcome but get there faster is beyond me.
I mean, you know, sometimes we think hiring faster may be expensive because you need to. It costs a lot for screening, recruiting, and all the process. But it's actually more expensive if you do not do it. I mean, you do everything and then the candidate is not available. You know, look at the cost of that.
That's right. Yeah, they've made decisions. Again, they have choice.
Absolutely. And then coming to specific to technology hiring, basically, if you really look at it, you know, typically a lot of companies have technical panels. You know, inside technical interviews, the scheduling conflicts. It takes forever to really get those. You know, versus you said, bring somebody for a day. You know, yeah, that could be faster, obviously, but. Now, even before you do that, if you wanted to, you know, make sure at least their technical skills and are at the pace of what company is looking for, what that particular job is looking for. I mean, that's where I guess some of the tools, technologies, asynchronous tools, technologies, and then platforms like eTechie actually could bring a lot of value.
Tons of
it. Because it can happen instantaneously. You don't need to be time to.
That's right. That's absolutely right. I mean, tech skills and, you know, making sure that what they say on their resume or their LinkedIn profile is accurate. You know, one of the things that has changed, and I think it's really fascinating, is text recruiting and the way that we communicate. Again, talent has driven this. You know, this is not like recruiters are innovating or even talent companies are innovating. The candidates don't want voicemails. They don't want emails. So they want text messages, they want an SMS, and they want to be able to look down, look at a message and go, huh, okay, click, boom, schedule, done. And that's how they behave. Again, if you want that talent, you have to change your behavior. If you don't want that talent, you know, continue on as normal.
Old fashioned, legacy, whatever you call. I mean, especially with artificial intelligence and the chatbots basically are taking this to the next level.
That's right. And you know what? I think the fear initially with that, Balo, was that people would care. Like they'd somehow be disrespected by talking to a bot or by chatting with a bot. I think what we've learned, thankfully, to Siri and Alexa and things like that, is that it doesn't matter if it's a bot. Candidates don't care if it's a bot. If the bot's going to tell them something that they didn't know or connect them in a way that they weren't going to be connected, they don't care if it's a bot. They would care if it's like, take something like candidate feedback, something that historically we've been terrible at. Well, now a bot can actually screen a resume, look at it and say, you don't have one of the preferred, let's say it's a bachelor's degree, in accounting. You don't have a bachelor's degree in accounting or a master's in accounting. So you're not going to be a great fit for this job. It's actually a prerequisite for this job for an interview. Prior, recruiters would have never gotten back to that person. That would have went into the ATS, dropped into the depths of hell, and we would have never, ever gotten back to that person.
The same bots also can take the conversation a little further. So the next question is, can you tell us why do you think you are a match to this position?
Love it.
That's a fantastic next question to ask, and then take it back for the human review. Basically, is this answer really justifiable for this job? Should we make an exception?
Yeah, and again, you can put all kinds of great probative questions in there. What drives you? What do you really? What type of feedback do you prefer? Like I'm one of these people personally. William speaking now. I don't like positive feedback. Mm. So I'm a weirdo. So right off the bat, well, you knew that already, but I don't really respect positive feedback. When someone says, hey, you did a good job, I know I did a good job. And where I get the most value is solicited negative feedback. So if I asked you, like when we get off the call from today, And I email you or I call you and say, okay. We spent an hour together. What did I do wrong? What could I have done better? What could have done better? Now that I'm asking you to criticize me, and I don't want to put it in generations or gender or age or any of that stuff. I just think as human beings at different points in our lives, we need different things. So a bot can find that out. Let's say you're coming up on a performance review. You know what you've done and what you haven't done. What type of feedback is going to best drive you? That'd be great to know. Because what you're really getting at is culture and the values of the firm. And if it's an well-articulated values of the firm, you can ask them about those values. Do our values match? It's not that, are you a good person? Are we a good people? It's just we can have different values. This is what the New York Times got wrong about Amazon, by the way. They wrote a nasty, nasty article about culture, the culture of Amazon, and being wrong, quote unquote wrong. The Amazon culture is one of which it's best idea. Everyone works 100 hours a week. Everyone has their A game all the time, and you're expected to be critical of yourself and others. It's acceptable to call people out. So that isn't a culture necessarily that I would thrive in or Ryan would thrive in. But that's not necessarily a bad culture. What's funny about the article is that's most investment banks on Wall Street behave the exact same way. But because it was Amazon, they attacked them as a quote unquote bad culture. And there is no such thing as a bad culture. There is a bad culture for you. And you can say, hey, that's not how I want to work. I have two young kids. I want to spend time. I want to go to their games, that type of stuff. So it could be a bad culture for you, but not necessarily a bad culture.
Then again, each job is different, and also candidate, whether it's an active candidate or a passive candidate, versus is it a full-time contract. I mean, there are several various things, and not one thing fits for all. If it's really a contract, 6-month delivery engagement, you know what needs to be delivered. You know, you probably care less about everything else, or not care less, but you will put more focus on the delivery part and can you deliver, can you do it, versus, you know, the cultural part and, like you said, the team environment and the coordination part and all. So it really depends on job to job, obviously. But again, you know, most of these.
You're getting into some really interesting stuff there, Balu. And this is the gig economy, freelance economy, and how talent behaves. Talent wants to work differently today than it did, 10 years ago. But the irony is recruiting and hiring managers and HR still believe in this kind of linear or full-time, part-time. So I think in cases where you know it's a project and you want to attract that type of talent, then I think you talk about the outcomes of the project. And I think it's more about the performance, more about the, on-time delivery, high quality outcome, and meeting a high quality outcome. And it's within a specific date. You know, the best part about projects is there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. So even in a project, you're still going to need to know about some of the inner workings of how work gets done. Every company has that list of things that make them both brilliant and awkward at the same time. And even in a freelance, a gig economy, we got to make all that stuff transparent. It's going to be funny for you to hear this, Balak, but I don't believe in active versus passive candidates. I believe every human being walking the face of the planet is an active candidate.
Yeah.
And Amanda, who's in the room, who loves the company, if I offered her a job for $1 million to move to Tibet to run some company for me, she might not take the job, but she's probably going to think about it. Yeah. Everyone's a candidate. A human being can only have 3 relationships with a company. You're either a candidate, an employee, or alumni.
I agree 100%. I mean, it's like anything is for sale. But on another side, if it is an active candidate, the delay in the recruiting process would hurt a lot more than in a passive candidate, because passive candidate is probably available for a longer time, or they are not actively looking. Versus an active candidate is actively looking, so you don't have much time to wait, or you don't have much time to slow down your process and lose it.
I think first of all, there's 2 things that you've unlocked there. One is a talent isn't going to wait for anybody for any reason, whether or not they're active or passive. And two, you've unlocked something that probably that you might not even be familiar with, but there's a real bias, a real bias that we don't talk about. It's kind of like an unwritten rule in baseball. Or unwritten rule in cricket. We don't talk about that hiring managers and recruiters prefer passive over active. If someone's an active candidate, there's a perception that something's wrong with them, which I don't believe for a moment, by the way. But I can tell you with 100% certainty that there is a bias in our industry against active candidates. And again, no one's going to talk about it publicly. But there's a perception. If you're active, why are you active? What's wrong with you? What'd you do wrong? How'd you get fired? Why don't you have a job? Why aren't you working? Those are questions that we, in our minds, ask of active candidates, and we don't ask those of passive candidates. Talent doesn't wait.
Yeah.
Period, end of story. Talent will not wait for you on any level.
100%. The quality doesn't have to sacrifice the speed of hiring. You could analyze your existing processes, maybe eliminate some of the unnecessary processes, or expedite some of the higher priority processes with the tools and technologies in place. And I'm sure quality and speed can go together. Absolutely.
That's right. Yes. Here's a thing that people. I think it's a quote from Billy Beane. the general manager of the Oakland A's, and I think it came from Moneyball. But it's this concept of innovation. It's, if we weren't already doing it this way, how would we do it? And so when we look at our processes, all of our processes, from sourcing all the way to onboarding, I would go further, but let's just stay there between those two goalposts. Every little micro process, it's not associated to Susie or Jim or, you know, Ted or Alice or whatever. Every little micro process needs to be looked at about every 6 months and said, if we weren't doing it this way, how would we do it? So that you can literally deconstruct it and make it faster. And that'll get us to innovate. That'll get us to crunch down the time. Because even if we can take something that might have taken 4 days and we take it down to 3 days, okay, we're getting faster. And we should celebrate that. We're getting faster. Then what we should do the next time we look at it is go, how can we get it to 2.5 days? And things like that through every micro process. And I think if we do that, we're going to catch up to talent. And we're going to be able to basically work on their terms as we should.